The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
What I witnessed at the TCF Center was complete fraud. The whole 27 hours I was there, there was batches of ballots being ran through the tabulating machines numerous times, being counted 8 to 10 times. I watched this with my own eyes. I was there to assist with IT. Everything that happened at that TCF Center was fraud. Every single thing. Every avenue was taken to commit it.
Riveting testimony there from Michigan yesterday. So you had Pennsylvania last week, Arizona on Monday, and then Michigan. And in the case of Michigan, a lot of the statements were shorter. They were just bringing up one witness right after another, right after another. How many witnesses do you need? That particular woman, Melissa Carone, she was naming names. Here's the people I was working with. This top guy was in on it. In fact, I think 90% in this TCF counting center that I was at, I believe they were all in on the fraud. And she was there for 27 hours, all through the day, all through election day, all through the night. She went home at 4 or 5 a.m., slept for a few hours, and then came back on November 4th. Pretty amazing. Appreciate you joining us on today's show. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And as per usual, we have a lot to get to on today's program. One witness after another. I think when you add all of the cases together, all of the hearings together, there's more than 1,000 affidavits that have been signed. People giving testimony under oath. And there's no evidence the major media would have you believe. The Democrat media complex. Legacy media. Nothing to see here. It's interesting when you contrast it with Eric Cherumella. Remember that name? He's the John Brennan clone. The 30-something whistleblower that just... He just filed a complaint. So far, we'll have to go back and double check this, but so far as we know, no affidavit, no sworn testimony under oath. He's just embedded in the CIA in his early 30s, and he files a complaint that what the President of the United States said on a phone call to the Ukrainian president, that should bring down his entire presidency. And it nearly did. Just one whistleblower. And remember how he was treated? You had to keep his name confidential. He could not be cross-examined. He could not come to a hearing and testify under oath. And he was a hero. He was a hero. There was a panel last October 2019, you had this, I think it's a CBS reporter. She's there talking with John Brennan and with the former CIA director, John McLaughlin. So all these former high-powered CIA agents or operatives, directors in the case of Mr. McLaughlin. And listen to how he responds. This reporter's saying, well, yeah, this whole thing's triggered by the one whistleblower. And the president is there saying it's this big conspiracy. Listen to how this exchange went down. Clip 10.
The impeachment inquiry is underway, sparked by a complaint from someone within the intelligence community. Feeds the president's concern and often used term about a deep state being there to take him out.
Thank God for the deep state. With all of the people who knew what was going on here, it took an intelligence officer to step forward and say something about it, which was the trigger that then unleashed everything else.
That's right. Just all that. That's all that it took. Just one John Brennan clone in the CIA to trigger this investigation that resulted in an impeachment hearing without a conviction, finally, in the Senate. Finally, that put an end to the circus, the nonsense. Well, it wasn't long after that whistleblower came forward that we knew why they kept his identity confidential, because he was, in fact, deep into the deep state. If you remember, last year around this time, Donald Trump Jr., he tweeted out this Breitbart article that said that this whistleblower worked closely with the anti-Trump dossier hoaxer. And then Don Jr. tweeted out, of course! Well, of course he did! Of course he was in on the hoax, the Russia collusion hoax. And then he starts another hoax. It was his complaint that triggered the Trump-Ukraine impeachment hearing. That's right. That's all that it took. And then the media, you know, we had to play along and pretend that, well, his identity is kept confidential because we have to protect him. He's a whistleblower, after all. And now you have all of these whistleblowers. You have all of these whistleblowers who have signed affidavits under the threat of perjury if they're lying. Okay, think about it. That woman you just heard from, Melissa Carone, she signed an affidavit. I forget which lawsuit it's in, but it's in one of the complaints. And then she comes forward with her testimony just yesterday, right in front of this Michigan State Senate oversight hearing. And she's peppered with quite a few questions. Here again is Melissa Carone from yesterday, clip three.
When a ballot jams, it puts up an error. It'll say discard or recount. So when it puts up that error, when a jam occurs, the correct way to go about it is to discard the whole batch, take the ones that have already been tabulated, put them back into a pile, put the one that jammed on top, and then discard it, discard the whole thing, and then rescan them. They were not discarding. So they were just rescanning, counting ballots 8 to 10 times, just recounting them. They had absolutely no idea what they were doing.
Or maybe they did. She talks about a lot of incompetence, people that had no experience running these machines. And then she talks also about the ballots, about the fraudulent ballots, about counting ballots multiple times. She observed the truck with the big ballot drop-off at 4 a.m. And, you know, the point has been made on a few conservative sites, and I believe Sidney Powell made this in her opinion last week, or her complaint last week as well, the Georgia one, that you see the same pattern in all of these states. These major counties, these big population center counties, where the Democrat machine has been running the show for decades, shutting everything down in the middle of the night. And then the big ballot drop-off. The big ballot dump. And then the miraculous turnaround for Joe Biden, where he's leading in these cities by about a 60-40 margin. And then to make up the difference, he closes it out. He's on the finish line with like a 90-10 differential, or in some cases, 92-8, okay? Almost all Biden ballots. The Biden ballot miracle. That tells you, doesn't it, that it was coordinated. Sidney Powell's right. Rudy Giuliani's right. President Trump is right. This goes all the way up to the top of the Democrat Party. And who can forget? You've heard it on this show 5-6 times already. Who can forget what Joe Biden himself said before the election about the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in history? And now all these witnesses are coming forward. You know, Ms. Caron there said at the end of her testimony that she, I think one of the senators, the state senator, said, well, have you been contacted by the DOJ? Anybody at the FBI? Are they curious? Have they gotten your testimony? And she said, I called them. She called the FBI on November 5th. And then they I guess the line was disconnected after she was giving most of her spiel. And then the FBI didn't call her back. And so then she called the FBI back. So I think there's some senators in Michigan wondering, what is the FBI doing? If anything, there have been some mixed signals. The Associated Press, of course, yesterday came out with the big reveal that Bill Barr says there's no, the actual quote is this: to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. All right, there's no video or audio of him. It's just the Associated Press. And I guess we'll see probably in the next day or two if Bill Barr is going to come out and say anything to clarify or to add to that later on in this AP article. I mean, there's plenty, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of conservatives that in their minds, you know, he's dead. He's now deep into the deep state. They have thrown him under the bus. He has stabbed President Trump in the back. And I don't know, again, if that's completely accurate at this point. Although, you know, when you look at 2 Kings 14, you see that Jeroboam has no help. So it's possible. It's possible that he's caved into some pressure here. But he didn't indicate in this AP report that the investigation was shut down or that they haven't stopped. He just said, to date, to this point. This is from the AP. It says, however, Barr said earlier that people were confusing the use of the federal criminal justice system with allegations that should be made in civil lawsuits. He said a remedy for many complaints would be a top-down audit by state or local officials, not the U.S. Justice Department. So essentially he's saying that they haven't really investigated anything yet on a scale that would indicate it would flip the election. Now, the president, for his part, his team came out right away after the AP story hit the news and took exception with the statement. This is from Rudy Giuliani last night. He said the Justice Department also has not audited any voting machines or used their subpoena powers to determine the truth. And that's something that the Trump campaign has been urging the DOJ to do. There's only so much that Sidney Powell can examine on her own. You've got to get in there and examine the machines before they're wiped clean, like Hillary Clinton did in 2016. You got to get in there and do it before it's too late. This is what Catherine Herridge, I believe she's at CBS, she's quoting from a DOJ spokesperson. And it said last night, some media outlets have incorrectly reported that the department has concluded its investigation of election fraud and announced an affirmative finding of no fraud in the election. That is not what the Associated Press reported, nor what the Attorney General stated. The department will continue to receive and vigorously pursue all specific and credible allegations of fraud as expeditiously as possible. So already the DOJ issues a bit of a clarification, and I've seen a few. A lot of conservatives are quite upset, but others have wondered if this is all part of the media misinformation campaign. Of course, they're going to be doing everything that they can to divide the conservative party. They're going to already they spotlight every single Republican that comes out and says, "Hey, you better throw in the towel. Come on, give it up. You've got to give up the fight. You've got to give up the struggle." But as we noted, I believe on Monday's program, If you look at Matt Brainerd's analysis of statistics in all of the swing states, he said, and he's got some fascinating studies, but he said he's given his information over to the FBI and also has contributed to some of these lawsuits that are being filed. And then you had also a Republican poll watcher. I believe she might have been in Michigan, wherever she's from. No, I think Pennsylvania. She too was contacted by the FBI. She revealed that last weekend. Now, she said, I'm not sure if they were contacting me because they were, you know, agreeing with me or if they were trying to undermine what I had testified to. So we will see. But one thing is for sure, and my father brought this out in all of his writings following Election Day, the fact that with this two-tiered standard of justice that we now have in the United States, nobody from the radical left, all those, the panel you heard John McLaughlin, all these whistleblowers, this sham impeachment hearing, obviously the Russia collusion hoax, and nobody, not even Peter Strzok, nobody has gone to jail for all of this treasonous activity. Nobody's gone to jail, and so they just keep getting away with it. We'll see this time around. God is exposing a lot of corruption. There was a press conference yesterday, I believe in Virginia, not that far outside of D.C., but this was an attorney named Phil Klein. He used to be the attorney general of the state of Kansas, I believe. But he brought forward these two whistleblowers, as well as this one of the, I believe it was a cybersecurity expert that testified in the Pennsylvania hearing last week. So he brings these three witnesses out and then basically tells their story and then has them get up in front of the podium, in front of the mic to give their testimony. Now, you might remember in the lead up to the election, you had all of these Democrats on TV saying that the United States Postal Service was somehow going to steal the election for Donald Trump. And since Election Day, we've had all of these whistleblowers come forward and say, you know what, actually, the USPS, they were telling us to backdate ballots. They were sending mysterious shipment of ballots across state lines. You've had people, witnesses like the one yesterday, testifying to this fact. It's like I've said to Sam on more than one occasion. If this radical Marxist movement comes forward and accuses you of this, you can be sure that they're guilty of the very same thing they're accusing you of. And now look at all these whistleblowers and these witnesses that have signed affidavits about the USPS. Here's Jesse Morgan. He's a truck driver and he works for the United States Post Office or Postal Service. Here was his testimony from that press conference yesterday, clip 4.
I drive tractor trailer for U.S. Postal Service subcontractor. I drive a route transporting mail from Lancaster, Pennsylvania to Bethpage, New York to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania and back to Lancaster. On October 21st, when I arrived for my usual route in Bethpage, New York, an expediter made three references to ballots that were to be loaded into my trailer, including saying, hey, you've got a ballot today, or you have ballots today, and even showing me a piece of registered mail and saying someone really wanted their ballot to count. In total, I saw 24 Gaylords.
Okay, so these Gaylords are these huge mail containers, 24 of them going onto his trailer. He's to deliver all of these ballots. It's estimated that it was something like 140,000 to 280,000. So 100,000 to 200,000 ballots transported from Long Island, New York, down to those two cities in Pennsylvania, Lancaster and Harrisburg. And I believe he went to one city, Lancaster. He sat there for like 6 hours wondering, because usually half the shipment goes there, and then the other half goes to Harrisburg. In this case, he goes over to Harrisburg after waiting 6 hours, and he undoes his trailer, he parks his truck, he goes home for the night, and then the next day, that trailer that he uses all the time was gone. So here you have, just again, we don't know all the answers. We don't know what happened to it. We don't know what they were, where they were from. He said they all had handwritten addresses. But why are they coming from Long Island, New York? Why do you have hundreds of thousands of ballots crossing state lines? Here's yet another witness. That same press conference, you had another USPS worker from, I think it was Wisconsin. He said there were two separate postal supervisors or workers that said or gave the order to backdate as many as 100,000 ballots. So that witness is named Nathan Peace. So you have Nathan Peace, you have Jesse Morgan, you have, what's the name of the girl we played at the start? You have Melissa Caron. These are real people. What did they have for Ukraine? Eric Cheramella. And that's it. And that's it. They brought all these other deep staters up, I know. But again, it was the complaint was supposed to bring down the president. Now, the president, he went ahead and released the transcript so the whole world could see what he said. And the deep state, they weren't expecting that. And yet they still plowed ahead with this ridiculous impeachment proceeding. 1,000 affidavits. If you look at some of the numbers, we've been playing these montages from the various states, the swing states, the Fox News feed, that election night. And then we've also noted the statistical anomalies, and there are a lot of them. In Pennsylvania, for example, and keep in mind, this was where the shipment, where Jesse Morgan was delivering this shipment, hundreds of thousands of ballots coming in from New York to Pennsylvania. In 2016, there were 266,000 mail-in ballots, and of that 266,000, 1% of them, 1% were invalidated because they weren't legit, or they were filled out the wrong way, or maybe they didn't have matching signatures. 1%. This year, there were 2.6 million mail-in ballots, so 10 times more because of COVID. That's all part of the conspiracy here. They had to use COVID for cover. They had to use COVID to make up all the fake ballots. But the interesting thing about this year, 4 years ago, 1% were invalidated. Of those 2.6 million mail-in ballots this time around, just 0.038% were invalidated. So hardly any. Not even 0.1%. 0.1%, 0.038%. 4 years ago, it's a full percent, 1%. That's just one of many statistical anomalies. And yet, no evidence. Even the Wall Street Journal this morning, oh, they were excited about what Bill Barr said yesterday. That's just one more hurdle for the president to try to get over. He's not going to get over this one. Bill Barr, I mean, that's his pit bull. If he's running up against the bar, as it says, well, then there's no chance. And then it goes through all of these claims by the Trump campaign's team, the ballot dumps. What about them? It's being painted as suspicious that big batches of votes were reported in the early hours of November the 4th. Well, there were big batches of votes that were just dumped in the early hours of November 4th. Happened in Pennsylvania. Happened in Detroit. Happened in Milwaukee. This article goes on to say, what's unbelievable, and this is the point about all the additional votes this year, the fact that Donald Trump got something like 10 or 12 million more than he did 4 years ago, and then Joe Biden, the record-setting 80 million votes. And the Wall Street Journal says, well, what's so unbelievable about that? I mean, the electorate grows. It's population growth. That's how you explain it. Nothing to worry about here. And then the journal says this, no, several states didn't simultaneously quit counting ballots on election night. States didn't just simultaneously quit count. Well, to be precise, it maybe wasn't the entire state, but it was all these five big cities or so. You've got Phoenix, you've got Atlanta, you've got Philadelphia, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Detroit, you've got Milwaukee. And they did. They did stop counting. And you can see it in the montages that we've been playing for you this week. Here's the one Sam put together from Pennsylvania, clip two.
In terms of Philadelphia not reporting any more absentee ballots tonight, and that may be taking a couple of days.
That's a real possibility.
Especially since they stopped counting at 10:30 at night. I'm not sure why. I mean, just because I guess everyone has to go home and they have to come back in the morning.
Yes, they're normal people, Martha, as opposed to us.
So wait a second. Now you're saying Georgia is probably not tonight. Michigan is probably not tonight. Wisconsin's not tonight?
I think there's a good chance that that's where we're sitting.
And Pennsylvania's not tonight.
Pennsylvania is strongly signaled, both before and then during the counting, that you know they're not going to have enough of the vote counted so that we can accurately classify what's going on there.
And North,
we're not going to have a Pennsylvania answer until well into tomorrow, if even then. I mean, we're not going to get it tonight. There's no chance of that.
He is up 600,000 votes in Pennsylvania, so that he can make up 600,000?
It is theoretically possible, yes.
We knew that those seven counties told the Secretary of State's office a few days ago that they were going to man the polling stations tonight and then worry about the mail-in ballots tomorrow.
So is it, like, is the inner city in some of these places performing under?
It would
where
appear.
Hillary was?
It would appear. I mean, that's what I find here. I mean, the smart guys might be able to fill in the blanks on that, but that's a clear difference to me. We just looked at three major American cities, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Milwaukee, and each time it came up with a 10% deficit from 4 years ago. That could be significant, yeah. Ultimately.
That's a very interesting look at it.
You notice at the end of the night that the end of the conversation, it just dies. We just sit
there. We're taking it all
in, okay.
I promise.
It's all right. So am I.
Despite reports that Philadelphia had stopped counting its ballots, officials say more than 2 million ballots are still being counted, mostly in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia.
Pennsylvania, I'm pretty sure, is going to take a few days or longer.
So there's your two-minute montage on Pennsylvania from election night. And over and again. And at one point, they don't really know what to say. They stop counting. To that point, Biden was running behind Hillary Clinton by about 10%. Then all the mystery ballots come in. And the Wall Street Journal says, oh, that's not a big deal. People want to say that there's some kind of suspicious activity going on. And you have all these witnesses coming forward describing the suspicious activity. And the media turn a blind eye. And you know why? Well, James O'Keefe had his big report last night on CNN. I don't know how he gets these audio recordings of internal CNN dialogue. But you have these CNN producers that are basically saying, look, we don't want to cover the contesting the election. We've got to cover that up. So they're doing that. They talk about it on the phone. And then you turn on their channel and you see nothing. You see no Jesse Morgan. You see no Melissa Carone. You don't see anybody. You don't see any of these witnesses. You don't have people going through the details of Sidney Powell's complaint. Or Lynn Wood. Or the Trump campaigns. Or this group in Pennsylvania that are contesting. That are contesting the change in the law by the legislature. Again, without the consent of the people. Act 77, I think it is. That's kicked up, by the way, to the Supreme Court. I don't think the Supreme Court has agreed to hear it yet. But you have Ted Cruz yesterday. He's releasing a statement saying, urging the Supreme Court to take this on. They're trying to get the Supremes to hear it through Samuel Alito. So we'll see. But nothing about any of this. And then all of the statistical anomalies, the fact that it's 60-40 or 70-30, and then right on the home stretch, here comes Biden getting something like 9 out of 10, 91 out of 100, 95 out of 100, or in some cases an entire stack of all Biden ballots that Michigan hearing, by the way. Well, you have, I guess I can skip the one who said he saw Republican poll watchers being escorted out by policemen. And then people in the counting facility cheering. We got to get rid of these Republicans. This is a Democrat machine here. Come on now. There's someone who testified to that yesterday. And then you have Dr. Linda Lee Tarver. She's a Republican, a proud Republican. And the reason I thought these clips were good is that she's really talking about a problem. She's stepping back and looking at the problem of voter fraud that's been in these big cities for decades, even before COVID-19 came along. COVID-19 gave them the opportunity to do this on a grand scale. But as she explains, look, Detroit's been this way for decades. Here's clip 7.
Ballot harvesting in Detroit, Flint, and Pontiac has been going on for decades. It's a misdemeanor to give your ballot to anyone not allowed by law to receive it, and it's a felony to take that ballot. People have been prosecuted in Michigan over the years as a result.
So that's Dr. Linda Lee Tarver. She said it's been going on for decades. These are felonious acts. In some cases, misdemeanors, not as serious, but in all cases, illegal. Illegal. She went on to say this, clip 8.
And in every election in the last 25 years, Republican poll challengers were removed by the police, especially in Pontiac.
Removed by the police when, as she points out, the law, and that's what she's saying here. Look, we don't need more laws. We just need to enforce the ones that are there. And the laws that are there say that these people should be protected, not dismissed, not sent away, but protected. Here's clip 9.
If you follow the law in the urban Democratic controlled areas, then we would not be here today. I certainly wouldn't be here. But in 25 years that I've been monitoring elections, working with the Secretary of State, the last 8 doing election integrity, it's been a hot mess in the same Democrat-controlled areas. We don't need any more laws. We need to enforce the laws, and we need to open up the doggone ballot boxes.
Now, I think that the reason this got my attention today is just because of the point my father's made about exposing the fraud. If none of this happens on November 3rd and 4th, we're not talking about anything that's been going on in Detroit for 25, 30, 40 years. And yet, here is this expert, I guess if you could call her that. She's been a politician. She's worked for the Secretary of State Department there in Michigan. I think she's retired now. But here, the lid is being lifted on these Democrat machines. These Democrat machines in these big cities that all went by the same playbook on November 3rd and 4th. They all went the same way. They all favored Biden in every case. There's not one glitch or one anomaly that worked in the favor of Donald Trump. It happened the same way in every single city. And it's all being exposed. My father said, I'm also certain that we're about to see some of the biggest frauds exposed, perhaps ever. Perhaps ever. That's from his article that we're promoting this week on various news sites. By the way, that started just yesterday. We're doing what we can to promote this article and to promote the way that this is going to turn out somehow, some way, in the end. I'll just close this segment by referring you to this Newsmax piece on the lawsuit that the Trump campaign filed yesterday in Wisconsin. They were having the recount all through the weekend, and then I believe it was during the Arizona hearing on Monday that the news splash that Wisconsin had certified, I believe Arizona did on that day as well, because they had the recount, and the count was about the same. And so the Trump campaign, what a fool Donald Trump is. He paid those millions of dollars just to get the recount, and what a failure it was. Well, as part of the recount, according to Wisconsin law, it's more of an audit than it is a recount. And in the course of that recount, the Trump campaign flagged 220,000 ballots that they see as invalid, illegal. And so following the day after the certification, they filed this lawsuit, this complaint in Wisconsin. And it says here, this is Newsmax, the lawsuit comes after the state completed its partial recount. It says the legal team in Wisconsin, led by former Wisconsin circuit judge, said the recount gave the campaign a unique ability to examine ballots. So this is what they've wanted to do in all these states. But because of the election laws being set up the way that they are in Wisconsin, it's more strict. There's not as much opportunity for fraud. And so as this Trump representative says, this gave us finally a unique ability to examine ballots. They could actually get up close and look at them. You would think everyone would want to do this. You would think both sides would want this. But why do the Democrats fight the way that they do to resist this? Why do they kick Republican poll watchers out? Why do they shut down counts and then just leave three or four people there like they did in Georgia to continue working the machines? They wouldn't do any of these things if everything was above board. They'd do none of that. But they did it because they have something to hide. And that's what's being exposed. It says here, the lawsuit also claims that the law was violated several times through altered certification of absentee ballot envelopes, voting events called Democracy in the Park, where ballots were accepted, a lack of required absentee ballot applications, and unlawful claims of indefinite confinement. So that was filed yesterday. And then, as I mentioned, that one was submitted to the Supreme Court. As to whether they hear it or not, we'll find out soon enough. These are just a couple of the many lawsuits that are ongoing. The American Spectator had a piece on the Sidney Powell suit filed a week ago. Sidney Powell releases the Georgia Kraken. And in the estimation of this author, she has the goods. She has the goods. And this author is the one that brings out the fact that, as Powell notes, the pattern is the same as you go from state to state. The American Spectator says this: Powell is 100% correct when she notes that there had been attempted foreign interference in the American electoral process in the past. And then he goes on to quote from the New York Times. And of course, who can forget what happened 4 years ago when it was Russia, Russia, Russia? It's all they were saying. It's that our election's being, it's being meddled with. And now, what a different tune. The most secure election in the history of the United States. That's what that outgoing official at DHS said just 9 days after the election. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Well, if you think about the times we're living in, it really and truly is exciting. This is an evil and dark world, for sure. But to be to those who know the truth and who understand these prophecies being fulfilled, and to know that we're transitioning from the end of this present evil world to the establishment of God's kingdom on earth here in the next few years, the next several years. That's pretty exciting. God right now is pleading. He's reaching out to this dark and dying world. He's pleading for repentance. He's making one final pass, as it says in Amos 7. Yesterday, as I said earlier, we launched this major advertising campaign for my father's electrifying article that we have told you about over the last couple of weeks, Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. And he explains in that piece that God's making a final pass here. He's trying to wake up our nations before the start of the Great Tribulation that then culminates in the glorious return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Here we are living in the Jeroboam end. Here we are in the very last days. My father keeps telling us about this important history regarding Jeroboam in the book of Kings. Jeroboam the first and Jeroboam the second. Jeroboam the first, his reign was in the 10th century BC. And then Jeroboam the second came along about 115 years later. So the entire history, it spans almost two centuries, I think it is, maybe a little bit more. But all of this history, the history of these Israelite kings, and there was not one of them that was righteous. You know the story about Solomon, and after his death, the kingdom divided in two, and Jeroboam led those 10 northern tribes in Samaria, and Rehoboam presided over the smaller kingdom of Judah. And they also had the throne of David, of course. Their headquarters was in Jerusalem. But this history is covered in the book of Kings, as I say, in 1 Kings 11. That's when we meet Jeroboam the first. And the Bible says he's an industrious and mighty man of valor. So he was one of Solomon's chief lieutenants. And then following the death of Solomon, as I say, that Israelite nation, it broke apart, it divided in two. And Jeroboam the first led that northern kingdom. Now, every king after Jeroboam the first followed in the path of Jeroboam's wickedness. So if you fast forward to Jeroboam II, as I said, Jeroboam I, that's 1 Kings 11 and 12 and so on. And then you get to 2 Kings chapter 14, and that's where we meet Jeroboam II. Now, by this time, Israel had nearly faded from view. Afflicted and forlorn, Israel could have easily been blotted out right then and there. You see that in the narrative. You see that in the history. But instead of being blotted out, as we well know, God miraculously intervened to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam II. That's in 2 Kings 14, verses 26 and 27. God had mercy on Israel when they didn't deserve it. He gave them one last age of advancement and wealth before Assyrian conquest. Now, this is all history that if you've been following this work for very long, you're very, very familiar with it. It's all history that's there in the Book of Kings, as I say. But there's a lot more in the Book of Kings. There's a lot more to this story. In fact, it's right in the middle. It's right in the middle of all this Israelite history. And you can read and know and study about God's work. So here were all of these evil kings that rebelled against the house of David. And yet right in the midst of that story, you read about what God was doing, specifically through his faithful prophets. And I just want to draw your attention to the prophet Elijah and his successor, Elisha in particular. You can read about them. You can read about their work. You can read about their ministry. Also in 1 and 2 Kings. Elijah, by the way, means his name means my God is God. So he was doing a work for God, the great God of this universe. And you can read about his work in 1 Kings chapter 17 through 19. And then you can move into 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 1 through 13, and you read about Elisha, and then that takes you right up to the history of Jeroboam II in 2 Kings 14. This was God's work during this time of Israelite history, this tumultuous time of evil, and in the case of Israel right up before Jeroboam II, despair. And really, they were vulnerable to attack from without when God intervened, as I said. Now, there were other prophets that came and went during this time period, not just Elijah and Elisha, but these two, God does draw special attention to these two in the Book of Kings, and for good reason. These two were forerunners of two godly servants that would appear in these last days. You think about the ministry of Herbert W. Armstrong, and then following him, the ministry of my father, Gerald Fleury. For nearly a century, God's work, God through these two servants, has prophesied in the same spirit of Elijah, in the same spirit of Elisha. A century, as I say, that our nations have been warned of impending national calamity and eventual captivity. And also, God's servants have been trumpeting the good news of the soon coming kingdom of God, the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Now, through it all, you go back to the start of Mr. Armstrong's ministry, 1926, 27, all the way through to today. And for the most part, this world, our nations, the United States and Britain, little Judah, the overwhelming majority of people coming into contact with God's work and the message coming from God's work have rejected it or ignored it. They haven't heeded the warning. And it was the same. It was very similar in the days of Elijah and Elisha. This is from Luke 4 and verse 25, Jesus says, "But I tell you of a truth, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when great famine was throughout all the land, but unto none of them was Elijah sent, save unto Sarepta, a city of Sidon, unto a woman that was a widow." So when this lengthy famine came upon Israel, where did God send Elijah? Where did he go? Now, the Jews that Jesus interacted with there in the book of Luke, the Jews of Christ's day thought that Elijah had been sent to shake the nation of Israel, to perform many mighty miracles, to help widows, the multitudes, and so on. And you would think that, judging by the way the Jews sort of viewed this history, that Elijah would have had tens of thousands of supporters and followers and so on. But Christ is telling them here that that's not the way the history played out. Not at all. This was not some great, powerful, popular, universal work in people's eyes during the days of Elijah and Elisha. But it was, nevertheless, it was the work of God. Now, that example in, I believe it's 1 Kings 17, where during this time of famine and drought, Elijah goes and just stays with this widow and her son. Well, verse 27, I'll just keep reading from Luke. It says, "And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha, the prophet, and none of them was cleansed, saving Naaman the Syrian." So it was the same with Elijah. He had this work, he was with this widow for a time, and then there was just the one healing in Elisha's ministry. He didn't perform scores of great healings, just the one mainly. So was this really the work of God? What were these great men doing if they didn't have large throngs of supporters everywhere that they went? Well, they were rejected for the most part. Even Jesus Christ, now he did have spectacular displays of miracles. And what does the book of Acts say? In the end, at the end of his ministry, it says there were 120 of them, 120 disciples, after all those miracles. Verse 24, it says, "And he said, Verily I say unto you, no prophet is accepted in his own country." No prophet is accepted. You see, people today, just like back then, even during the days of Christ's ministry, for the most part, they reject the truth of God, the warnings of God. That has been the history. In my father's booklet, From the Beginning, he says, regarding this crowd that Jesus was speaking to in Luke 4, he says, they didn't understand the Elijah work. They didn't understand it. Elijah was only sent to one widow and healed only one leper. He was primarily sent to reveal the true God. That was his mission or purpose. He was not sent to save widows or to heal people. If the Jews had listened to John the Baptist, a type of Elijah, they would have known who the Son of God was. To this day, they still don't know. Now, that's just the plain truth of the Bible. God's servants come to reveal the true God, and most people, they don't want to walk in the light, like it says in John 3, because they rather prefer darkness. They love the darkness. It says in the New Testament that John the Baptist performed no miracles, and he was out in the wilderness. Now, God has certainly blessed us with impressive facilities here at Edstone and at headquarters, our headquarters campus. But still, this is a relatively small group of supporters scattered over all the earth. Faithful and committed, for sure. But not that many. Not that many who receive the truth and then act on it. Let me just finish this section. In Luke 4, verse 28 says, "And all they in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath and rose up and thrust him out of the city and led him unto the brow of the hill whereon their city was built, that they might cast him down headlong. See, they wanted to kill Jesus Christ. He was setting them straight on some of their own history, showing them that, look, you're rejecting me. You've rejected John the Baptist. You don't even understand the ministry of Elijah. And then they wanted to kill him. In the booklet from the beginning, my father says, Mr. Armstrong didn't perform many great healings or do numerous miracles. He didn't shake the nations, as one Laodicean group said the Elijah would. But he did, listen to this, he did reveal the true God, which was why God sent him. That's how you know if it's God's work, if it's a work doing the will of God, if the true God is being revealed, then you can know for sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.